When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Conspiracy Beer Me. I'm Justin Scranton.
I'm Shane Smith. Foamy.
This is a podcast where comedians talk about wild, weird conspiracies while we drink beer. And today we're talking about the interdimensional Bigfoot.
Oh.
An emerging theory amongst Bigfoot enthusiasts, which I'm quite fond of.
Yeah.
And so we're excited to be here, and we're coming to you live. Well, not live, but we're coming. We're recording.
We're here in the
Conspiracy Beer Me headquarters at the Dudio in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is our first full episode we've recorded here. We're very excited. Thanks. If you're not a patron, then that's not directed at you.
But you could. Thanks.
You could join the party, and we're gonna be doing some live events here. And welcoming our patrons in for a beer. We actually got to show it off to a couple patrons last night.
It was very, very
cool to sort of see that happen.
Yeah, it was fun to just walk over from a bar, show up in the studio, and just keep hanging. Yeah, it was fun.
It was a blast. Yeah. So we're excited. And I'm very excited because our first full episode is with a great comic. And we're welcome to have you on the show. Give up for Shane Moss.
Hey. Yeah. Nice. Thanks for having me. I love the studio.
No,
it's
thanks.
So nice.
Thank you.
I'm so happy that I get to meet you now instead of whatever horrible space you were in before. Did you have a studio before?
It was at my house.
Which is quite nice. I mean, both the studio, but also Shane's house isn't a kind
I'm a little sad that we're doing it here. That's my thing. I'm like, I enjoy showing off my yard at my house.
Yeah, his yard is worth seeing while you're here in town.
And did you call it a studio then?
No, that was a random.
Does anyone else have it? Has anyone done that? How did everyone miss studio?
We immediately bought the website.
We have the studio.com.
No one had studio.com.
Nobody.
That's once in a while you just get, because everyone's found everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you found a new thing.
It's great.
Anytime you find a new website, like the chances of that are about the chances of finding an interdimensional Bigfoot.
Absolutely.
That actually might be correct.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like it's like.
And when Dudio came up, I was like, it's a bunch of cis white guys. I don't know if Dudio is a cool name, but I like it. And we bought the website, so we got it.
Right.
It's at now.
I think you got to have fun with that.
Yeah,
stuff.
For sure.
I got on my show, we always, I'm sure it's like not amusing to anyone but me, but our description of every episode, Mind Under Matter, me and Ramin Nazer, we always say that we're the this and that boys of comedy or whatever. And I just always thought it was hilarious when people call themselves like the bad boys or the bad girls whatever. I just always thought that was the silliest fucking thing imaginable. And so I did that to like mock it, you know, and it's
now it's your life.
Probably getting old at this point, but I feel like Dudio has, I feel like it's not, you guys don't seem like a real bro down.
No, we're not.
So it kind of works.
I work in NFTs, but I'm definitely not a bro.
Bro
Jason.
You mentioned Mind Under Matter, which is your podcast. You have a lengthy storied comedy career, which has taken you all over, and you've appeared on all kinds of television and all that. But Mind Under Matter is sort of what brought you to some degree to Raleigh.
Yeah.
So you are a temporary Raleigh resident, which we're thrilled about.
I might be staying longer. So far, so good. I like it. It's cheaper than other things that I was thinking about. I started comedy in 2004. Mm-hmm. At the time, the model was, you know, get that 5 minutes together and get on late night television and do well in festivals. And like the YouTube, I'm not sure, maybe just had started existing. And so I was kind of one of the last people to benefit from that model.
It's a dying, it's a dead model now for sure.
In 2007, I was in this big festival that no longer exists, this HBO Comedy Arts Festival, and I won an award for best stand up, and I got the following. So I got my first Conan before entering my third year of comedy. And then amazing. I don't think there's anyone faster other than like a Bo Burnham, which is like a totally different like viral thing or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
And then I was on eight TV appearances that year. And then I just kind of thought that I could do whatever I want. Like, and then I got like a Comedy Central Presents and stuff right away. I had that before like my fifth year and everything. And I just sort of thought I could do whatever I wanted and mistakenly. And so like I was traveling internationally a bunch, and then they were all doing these themed shows. And I was like, well, I just want to travel more.
Yeah.
Like I never went to New York or LA or anything. I just liked being on the road. And so I was like, what would my thing be? And I was always reading science books and never had any of it in my act or anything. And so I was like, maybe I'll start integrating some of that, putting together a thing. That led to me eventually interviewing scientists when I was on the road for a podcast called Here We Are that I've been doing for almost 8 years now. And then, then I started in like 2016 is when I started doing indie stuff, because I put together a show about psychedelics and he couldn't like do that for like the Saturday date night, you know, hour and a half of psychedelic material or whatever. And so I started doing indie stuff and I became fond of that. And then I started doing more like shows integrating scientists and comedians together. I had a show, Stand Up Science, that I did like 100 cities with that in 2019. Jeez. And then COVID shut everything down, and then I dumped everything into my digital stuff, which was, so all my comedy went away. And then I was just, my science podcast is quite serious, I would say. I mean, not that we never have fun, but I consider it a science podcast. I don't use the word comedy in the description of it or anything. Yeah. And so then I went like a year or so with just not having any comedy, anything. And then I was on my friend Ramin Nazer's podcast. He's an incredible artist. He has like 200,000 Instagram followers and stuff. And you see his art sometimes when you're out and about. And I was on his show, and we'd always collaborated on certain things. And then we just organically were like, let's just do our own show and combine your art in ways. And and he interviews creatives and mystics for his own show, Rainbow Brain Skull. And then so we kind of had the yin and yang thing going on. And so, and he makes me laugh harder than anyone ever. So it's just, so we started doing it and put everything into it. And then that led to this Campout Festival. We were riffing one time about wanting to get all of our artists, so we have a lot of artists in our community, we're riffing about wanting to get them all together for some sort of festival. And then lo and behold, this guy Soup with Life is Art out of Raleigh, a concert equipment like production and lighting company and stuff, reached out and was like, hey, I just started doing festivals at my property, like the exact size that you're talking about. And I'm like, all right, well, let's just do this.
That's awesome.
And so, and then I came in May to check out some of his festivals, and I was like, oh, this is a bigger deal than what I originally
thought.
You
thought his property was like
mind.
His backyard.
Yeah. I couldn't tell from his site, cause it's like a yurt rental place. And so it's like, you couldn't see from the map how big it was.
Yeah,
and then
big.
He's like, oh, and then there's a camping field. And I'm like, how big is this field? And I'm like, you can't just take someone's word for it and like get 1,000 people to pack in and have everyone mad at you.
Yeah.
And so then when I saw the place, I was like, oh, that's just one of many fields.
Yeah.
So like there's a mile and a half of fields to get to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, there's like convenience stores within 15 minutes So you don't need to worry about people starving to death and everything going wrong and having to eat cheese sandwiches. Whatever that sandwich, what was the sandwich in Firefly?
I think it was just a slice of American cheese and a piece of white bread.
We gotta give that to people. When they enter, we need to have cheese sandwiches.
Firefest food truck.
Styrofoam container.
Really expensive cheese sandwiches.
It's just a FEMA truck.
Yeah, that's what it is.
So I was like, I might be a little in over my head in terms of, like, my original plan was, oh, I'll just show up like a week or two ahead of time and we'll like plan it from afar. And then when I got here, I was like, oh, I need to be here. I need to be doing sets. I need to be meeting people. I need to be booking all these bands. And so I moved on a whim. I came here and then I went back to Wisconsin, grabbed all my stuff and came right back. And
excellent.
I've been here since the end of May.
Well, that's cool.
It's so cool. Yeah. And it's the Mind Under Matter Camp Out Festival, September 9th and 11th, 2022. And for those of you listening, Conspiracy Beer Me will be there.
Mm-hmm.
So you get kind of get to see a festival with a lot of cool content on a lot of different varieties. But also we will be there and there's comedy, art, music, camping.
Yeah.
The whole shebang. It's going to be, early September is a really great time in Raleigh just to be around.
Yeah, here. Absolutely.
So excited. Yeah, I mean, I picked based on temperature, basically. I wanted to be warm enough to swim and cool enough to sleep comfortably at night.
Nice.
And at first it was like, well, we'll just use this one main stage and do everything. We'll record some live podcasts and just get like our, Patreon fans and stuff like that. And then get a couple bands. And then I got there. And so then we added... and we're like, that's just the music stage. And then over here, we'll have science talks. And over here is a wellness area with a sauna and stuff. And then let's add a stand-up comedy area, too, because we weren't even going to have stand-up comedy.
Really?
But my friend Mike Kaplan.
Yeah, I love Mike. I've met Mike a few times. Yeah,
they were going to come anyway. And so I was like, well, we might as well. Like Dave Waite was coming anyway.
Oh, really? Hell yeah.
Great.
So then I'm like, I guess we're doing stand-up now.
That's amazing.
Around the time you reached out, I was like... You know what? I think we're going to add a podcast stage because if you're just sitting around a lake, podcasts aren't the most ambient thing, if you're just trying to relax. So I was like, I'm just going to stick that like a more intimate area where 50-100 people can gather around. And
we love live podcasting.
Yeah, it's fun.
And that's one of our goals here in the studio is like to be able to put up, bring people in and it just...
It's fun.
Yeah, we're excited about it.
Although we did, when we had the people come over from the bar the other day, within like 5 minutes, I had walked out and walked back in. It was really gamey in here, I gotta say.
We don't have a lot of smelly.
Yeah. With all those, it was like 15, no, maybe 10 people in here. I was like, man, you guys, y'all.
Comics.
Yeah, it's hot. It's hot in Raleigh. It's a little stinky.
Well, you just gotta get like some HEPA filter or some air circulation.
That's true.
In
here we don't have a lot of there's none.
We're in a cave.
You'll need some sort of something.
For sure.
Well, to pivot just to our interdimensional Bigfoot, which is something that sort of combines a lot of cool stuff, and it's also interesting that your fascination with science plays into this. But to start, as someone who likes paranormal stuff, I think the question, do you believe in Bigfoot, is a great starting question whenever you want to talk to someone about, I think it's better than do you believe in ghosts?
Mm.
Like, do you believe in Bigfoot? And there's like three answers. I mean, well, maybe four. There's like an agnostic, like, I don't even care.
Right. But what's Bigfoot done for me is what.
Yeah. No. Like there's a yes, there's a no, and then there's like a I'm open to the possibility. Mm-hmm. But if somebody says no, I do not believe there is a Bigfoot. Like I just don't think there's anything to gain by talking to that person.
Really?
No.
I'm going to excuse myself.
You're not a Bigfoot believer? Talking to you. You're stuck.
The reason I just think is because I think that what you're saying is that you're not saying I haven't seen any evidence that lets me believe there is one.
Hmm.
You're saying I have seen enough evidence that made me positively conclude that there's no possible way that there's a bipedal hominid on this planet that we haven't discovered yet, which is a tremendously bold statement to me. like, especially in like the face of like the James Webb telescope, where like we take the first picture into deep space and we're like, oh, okay, we were completely wrong about every, like I always think that like an open mind is like the critical. And I think Bigfoot is a very interesting sort of litmus test of someone's receptiveness to the paranormal.
Okay.
Now, are you saying, no, I don't believe in it?
Yeah. I mean, there's an expression within like the psychedelic community, which is like, you know, these are great, like mind opening substances, but you want to have an open mind, but not so much your brain falls out.
Right.
Yeah. And
I agree with that.
I mean, I guess here's what I have more problems with the idea of Bigfoot than I could possibly name in 50 minutes, wow. Even if it was just me talking, but I'll get started. one is that I just don't really like unfalsifiable beliefs. So we can bet on whether there's Bigfoot, and I can say, no, I don't think that there is. And you can say, yes, I think that there is. And so one of us needs to be falsified for the bet to be won. Mm-hmm. So for you to win the bet, like if Bigfoot shows up, we find Bigfoot, well, I just lost the bet.
Right.
But there is no way for you to lose the bet. There's no way for you for us to prove that a thing like doesn't exist. And so not that we don't all hold and have to navigate life, you know, we don't sit around thinking, I wonder if my beliefs in this and that are falsifiable and what would prove me wrong. But scientists do, and I respect the hell out of them for doing it. And it's hard.
It's super hard. Yeah.
And I think that additionally, I think that belief in Bigfoot itself can be explained through kind of testable phenomena of sort of there are a lot of reasons why our brains evolved to seek like find the secret, this and that, that no one else has, and to believe in things that are out there and magical. And there's been a lot of adaptive advantages through all of human history to tell these like grand stories of a zillion different belief systems. And a lot of it helps drive us in interesting ways. It also, you know, when you're telling someone something about like some privileged information that you have, that's potentially making you a more valuable mate or increasing your status in some way or just making you a more interesting person. And I think it's just, I always think that it's just like, it's a little too interesting in a way that like I love primatology. And I always think like, well, if you're into Bigfoot, a good place to start is to like learn about other primates take an interest in that. Yeah. But it seems like using the Loch Ness Monster, for example, I used to have a joke that I don't remember, but the premise of it was that, you know, if we found the Loch Ness Monster, it would be one of the least interesting things in the ocean. It's just that the things that are already discovered, we just kind of write off as like, oh, well, we've discovered that. But there's anglerfish with little light bulbs that like glowing attract jellyfish, others fish fishing. There's octopus have brains in their arms. Yeah. They have like 2/3 of the brains are in their arms. Yes. You can cut an arm off and it can think for itself and move around and everything until it runs out of blood.
Yeah.
And there's just endless, like we haven't even skimmed the surface of what actually exists in the ocean. And so to like obsess over if there's like some sort of weird sea giraffe or something, like if you found it, it'd be like, well, okay, there's this thing now and we can study that. And people would lose interest. Like a lot of those very, other than to like, maybe say, I told you so, or something like that.
Sure. But
so I guess it's a lack of appreciation for understanding more of what is known, which is endless and impossible. Mm-hmm. Right, and you can spend every day trying to learn what we can have access to learning more about.
Yeah.
And so to instead have like such a fondness for mystery is something that I think is fascinating in and of itself. That's mm-hmm. just such a huge part of the human condition. Oh, yeah. I've done a fuckload of psychedelics. I've seen weird shit that I can't explain. And, you know, people would think that I'm crazy for for talking about it. I actually have like grounded takes on why the brain is kind of manifesting some of these mm-hmm. hallucinations or perceptions or whatever. But it's also like, I can be like, well, you don't have to believe that I saw some like purple, dancing gypsy alien woman that like runs this hyperspace carnival. Like, I don't care if you do or don't, but you can also just smoke DMT.
Right.
Take a look for yourself. You may not see her, but you're going to see some wild shit.
Yeah, yeah. You know? So we were going to talk about, Santa Claus in our other episode. He's probably not on board with Santa Claus either. If he's not.
Oh, come on. Am I now not on board? I don't want to shut down the whole thing.
No. I think it's fun.
I love listening to, I'm going to, this will be fun because you're going to be able to maybe get to sell me on the idea.
Oh, yeah. We'll see.
I think it's going to be interesting because, the theory of Bigfoot that you're talking about, which is rooted in zoology or cryptozoology, and we've had a zoologist turned cryptozoologist on this show who's even written a book about Bigfoot, essentially saying like some of our presumptions about animals may not work if we really are dealing with an intelligent being. Mm-hmm. Like they might be able to survive with numbers much lower than we think.
What was the breakdown he gave us? Some scientific breakdown based on like how many of a population.
There's like a minimum population animal needs to not go extinct.
Mm-hmm.
And estimates, if there are big feet, are lower than that. But he's like, well, that might be because they're intelligent enough to stay alive. Because we're usually talking about not as intelligent, you know, mammals as what we think a Sasquatch is.
Mm. Right.
But that's all based on sort of this idea that there is a walking animal on this earth that we have not yet discovered in a definitive way, mm-hmm. which... You know, to be fair to the critics of that idea, like I do say like, well, like people say, well, we've never found any remains of anything that remotely approaches a Bigfoot.
Right.
We all now carry around high definition cameras with us. And yet the camera footage is either hopelessly shaky and blurry or just clearly staged.
Mm-hmm.
Like I always know it's staged when the video starts before they see the Bigfoot and they're like, what is that?
Yeah.
Like, oh, what is that? Mm-hmm. 'Cause that's not the first words coming out of my mouth. If I see an 8.5 foot hairy ape,
yeah, I'd be like, hey bud.
No, yeah. Like I'm not, first of all, I'm not walking through the woods filming ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if I am, I'm not like, what is that? Oh, look there. Yeah, like I'm like, oh fuck, my life is in danger.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I have retreated to a tree. I hope this thing can't climb. It's, you know.
I mean, paleontologists and archaeologists and things, they explore a lot of cave systems. And certainly there's lots of, I just did an episode with paleontologist Stephen Churchill at Duke, who's going to be at the camp out giving a talk. And they have in cave systems found like kind of Homo erectus ancestral cousins that weren't previously discovered, and they were incredibly well preserved and not mixed in. Usually if you're at a site excavating bones, there's just so many bones that you're just like going through endless like bird bones and antelope to find like a primate tooth is like a treasure. And but they found cave systems where it's only this species in there, and the only way that they could have gotten in there is if there was like some sort of grieving slash burial ritual that was happening, okay, where they were carrying their dead, which I mean, makes a lot of sense if you're any kind of a primate or things with much sentience.
Yeah.
Like your buddy dies and you're probably not going to just like sit there eating lunch while vultures pluck its eyes out.
Right. Put him somewhere. You're gonna, like,
it'll smell enough.
So I'm trying to come to you and say you know, there's a possibility that a sophisticated ape could be doing some sort of sophisticated burial thing that hasn't been detected. I mean, I doubt it very much, but I would doubt that could happen.
By the way, the
and has happened lots of times in the past.
The the Bigfoot experts, they don't like all the videos because they think they're for, you know, YouTube clout, which they probably are.
Yeah.
But they call them blob squatches, which I think is a great term. It's another blob squatch video. And I think the other telltale sign that they're fake, if you read people that have had encounters with Bigfoot in the wild, the way they describe them versus how they appear on camera, like when people see a Bigfoot and they tell the tale, they're like, not only was it large, it moved faster than I thought a person could move through woods, you know, like it was incredibly fast and agile. But in the videos, they look like a guy that like made a Halloween costume but didn't quite get the eye holes right, because it's just like they just lumber and
they're just trying to find their way.
They're just
the
like
trees.
It's clearly like, okay, that's not what we hear about.
Yeah,
and that's just led to this like skepticism about it. But the interesting thing I think is that there's been this movement amongst paranormal researchers that's called holistic. It's a more holistic approach to the paranormal. And I think it's driven by like all the conferences that happen now, where people that are really into this stuff talk about like there was times where the ghost people were the ghost people, the UFO people were the UFO people, the Bigfoot people. But they've had these conferences where like all this stuff comes in, and then people started to share experiences, and they're like, well, that doesn't sound that different than these experiences. And so people have started to say, well, maybe all these phenomena are interrelated.
Right. It's all high strangeness. It's all I'm sure you've probably talked about that in terms of just like how everything's connected in terms of paranormal, UFOs, cryptids. It's all, whether it's fueled by consciousness or our own brains creating these things, which, you know, we tell stories and we create things out of, you know, we create our own tuples in that sense. So,
And, you know, so as this data started to sort of mesh, like people started to say, well, like, wow, like, if you look at the hot spots for Bigfoot sightings, and then you Venn diagram that with hot spots for UFO sightings, like there's like incredible overlap. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes when people have a Bigfoot sighting and they, you know, people will always go and interview the person, there's things that like there's time loss and there's, you know, memory loss. There's fast moving objects in the sky. There are bright lights. There's inexplicable silence in the air. There's disorientation. All things that sound a lot like alien type abduction stories, right? That there's a lot of overlap there. And as that theory has kind of just sort of stirred the pot a little bit, then there's a growing theory that Bigfoot are not of this planet. They don't live here.
That's why we don't find them.
They are in fact interdimensional travelers who are here either by intent or accident. And when that theory gets kind of thrown out there, you get a sort of, people go back and look at old stories of Bigfoot encounters and they're like, ah, that makes sense now. So typical, John Bohannon, summer of 2000, he is driving on a dirt road, New Mexico, and he spotted the classic large bipedal hominid, 8.5 feet tall, whole body covered with like a reddish brown hair. And he said it reminded him of a typical Neanderthal. It's like, it looked like a Neanderthal on the face, but, you know, very hairy. And he followed it, and the creature saw him but never reacted. And then as he's following it, he says it's like it just walked into an invisible wall. Like it just literally disappeared into this wall.
I just assumed he just ran into an invisible wall and fell backwards. He's like, ah, I missed the door again. I'm just trying to get home.
No, yeah, so he's like, he's walking and then he's just gone is how the guy described it. And that's pretty typical. One more, just, you know, Larry Kelm, 1980, Eugene, Oregon. He's hiking and he says this, something that numerous people have said when they encountered Bigfoot. And I love the description. He said, all of a sudden, it was like I was looking through someone's glasses and it was not my prescription. Like all of a sudden, he's like, it's like, you know, have you ever looked to like a pair of glasses that are strong? Yeah, you're just like, can't, that's, he said that was disorienting like that. And then he sees this huge figure lurking over him. And suddenly, like, it goes clear, but he's not in Oregon anymore. He's in like a jungle landscape and something's pursuing him. And he turns around and runs. And now he can see this like blurry patch and he runs back into the Oregon universe and the jungle universe is gone. And what was pursuing him was what is a typical Sasquatch type creature. Mm. So, you know, when you think about that, that's this idea that like there is this some interdimensional portal travel going on, whether accidental or intentional. That actually Bigfoot comes from. And there's a couple theories which we can talk about, but I'll pause.
Crotch discomfort hurting your game? Fear no more. The kings of crotch comfort, Manscaped, have spent 2 years designing the most comfortable boxer briefs out there. Sleek, soft, comfortable, flexible, the brand new Boxers 2.0 from Manscaped take your balls to the royal ball throne. The global leaders in below-the-waist grooming have the Lawnmower 4.0 for the trimmin', so you can wear the Boxers 2.0 for the chillin'. They even have trademarked jewel pouch, so you know it's serious. I think it's time you invest in your family jewels. So let your bulge breathe and get 20% off plus free shipping by using our code CBM20 at manscaped.com. Let's say you're on a date and your partner catches that Manscaped on the waistband of your underwear. It's almost guaranteed to raise some eyebrows and act like a billboard on the highway to Pleasure Town. This is thanks to their Lawnmower 4.0, the best electric trimmer for below-the-waist grooming. Their fourth-generation trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin-safe technology. The Lawnmower 4.0 is waterproof and has a 400K LED spotlight so you can have a more precise shave. Beyond ball cleaning, Manscaped is focused on ball comforting with the new Boxers 2.0. Boost confidence everywhere you are knowing you're wearing the absolute best pack for your sack. These boxers are a game changer, and the features include the Jewel Pouch, a pouch designed to cradle your boys in their own special space, lined with perforated performance fabric to keep them well-ventilated. Is this heaven on earth? More like heaven on girth. This micromodal fabric is buttery soft and breathable, keeping your cucumber cool. Walk, run, strut, these moisture-wicking boxers breathe without breaking a sweat. The tagless waistband hugs your body without digging in. It lays flat against your skin to reduce chafing. The fly front opening gives easy access and makes bathroom breaks quick and efficient. Multiple ways for entry and passage for your package. You can even choose from an arrangement of designs and colors and sizes that range from small to triple X for all my guys out there. From El Jefe to Nighthawk, your boys will be in the right hands. Be proud of your underwear and wear the Manscaped waistband with a badge of honor. Your balls deserve it. Get 20% off plus free shipping with our code CBM20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with our code CBM20 at manscaped.com. Up your crotch game, because once the Boxers 2.0 touch your sack, you'll never go back.
Shane, where are you falling on all this? What's your Bigfoot take?
So for me, it's you know, I think it's one of those things where you grow up listening to stories and you're like, I want this stuff to be real because it's fun. It's what we base like our mythology on. It's what we base our movies on. And it's something that I think a lot of people would love to see. But again, I think there are things that happen in your brain a lot of times that you can't explain that are not out of the ordinary. In college one time, I was walking through a flea market and everything flipped upside down to my vision and I fell over. And I was like, well, right. That's weird. Should I get that checked out? I didn't, but I was like, well, that's weird. I may have had a stroke. It happened twice in college and I was like, I wasn't even a drug user then. I was like, that's weird. So I don't know. I want to believe it. I want it to be real. But again, I think it may be a thing where we just don't know currently what's out there. It's same with the ocean. You don't know what's all the way down there. I don't go so deep in the forest that I get lost and can't find my way out, but there might be something in there. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, we've explored the land quite a bit. True. The ocean, I could, there's endless all sorts of, I mean, there's things being discovered in the ocean all of the time.
Sure.
What I really like about Bigfoot conspiracies is that they are fun. I have like a real, like after 2.5 years of being a science communicator through COVID, while also being like tied in with a psychedelic community that's like super conspiratorial.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right, right.
The wellness, like,
yeah,
grifter supplement stuff, right, and whatnot. Yeah, yeah. And so it does make me yearn for more of the good old fashioned family friendly Bigfoot conspiracies. Yeah. It's just like, I want something with a nice merch shop. Like, I'm kind of getting a little sick of the, like, it's lizard shape-shifting, right, lizard, right, pedophiles poisoning everyone. Mm-hmm. That's, it's like, well, I can't really, I'm not going to put that like doll and I'm not going to give that's that right as a present to my, to my doll nephew or something. Yeah.
Yeah. We have a saying here. We're like, make conspiracies fun again, or make that stuff fun again. Cause it's gotten so crazy. And we just, can we not with the, all the crazy?
It's all
the,
it's everything's so gross now. It's like, let's go back to imagining fun primates that are shooting through portals and stuff.
That's Harry and the Henderson's. Like, there was fun movies back in the day.
I loved that show. Yeah, I loved that show. And believe me, if we find Bigfoot, I'm going to be fucking jazzed about
it. Hell yeah,
Especially if it's something like what noted Bigfoot hunter Ronnie LeBlanc, who is the partner of Bill Brock, who's probably the most famous Bigfoot hunter. But Ronnie LeBlanc wrote a book called Monsterlands, Encounters with UFOs, Bigfoot, and Orange Orbs. And his story is about the number of people that experience these floating orange orbs when they see a Bigfoot. Mm. And his theory, which, by the way, his partner, Bill Brock, which, I love that there's two Bigfoot hunters that have different theories on Bigfoot that are completely contrarian, but they're like, they're partners. They're like, we're in this together. Bill Brock, by the way, believes that Bigfoot are the last descendants of the Neanderthal, like hyper-evolved Neanderthals that are masters of camouflage and hunting and hiding from their arch enemies, the Homo sapiens. That's Bill Brock's theory.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, well, we mated a little bit with Neanderthals, but we also drove them to extinction, seemingly. But they were larger. They had larger brains. They ran in much, much smaller packs than humans did.
Yes.
They had, I think, kind of more sophisticated tool use. Speaking of like intelligence is always like a little, we don't really know always what that means. And a lot of brain size, just comes along with having a bigger body. There's just a lot more body to move around and neurons and things needed just for mobility.
Right.
And so it doesn't necessarily equate to it being like a whale should be, this like beyond genius thing for its brain size, but much of that brain is used for
a lot of CPU, not a lot of RAM.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that the right thing?
Because I don't know any whales that have jobs. They're not that smart to where they're going into work.
They're pretty damn smart.
They're very smart.
They are smart, but what you would think with a brain, however many times larger than humans, a great deal larger than humans, you would think that they would like, well, but if they were like, say, five level, I don't know how big a whale brain is, but if they were like five times smarter, why wouldn't they just be able to speak our language and
I assume big brains are like old computers, like IBM's computer took a whole room back in the day. It's like a whale's brain takes up a whole room, but God, I can't do what my phone can do.
Yeah.
You know,
and we don't even know all of like what brains necessarily
but if
do.
There's
yeah true yeah
but if their language or their brain is smarter than ours, we probably wouldn't know that.
Because it's such a slippery thing anyway of defining what intelligence is.
There's
like ants that can use tools and
yeah
things like that's like we don't we tend to see like a crow is able to like get a thing out of a bottle using a stick. And we're like, my God, I guess this thing's much smarter than we realized birds could be. And we're just anthropomorphizing intelligence is onto that bird. So I guess if they were somehow descendants of Neanderthals, that would have been, first off, that means that it's also a little bit of a stretch to see them here because they would have been migrating quite a bit more. Most of life came in the cradle, and the cradle of life is called in like Southern Africa.
Yeah.
And a lot of what probably pushed human migration patterns was the amount of space one would need to procure resources as a hunter-gatherer was pretty vast. And so as our population was exploding, you would just get pushed out of everyone would need a farm worth of space. And so they kind of kept on pushing each other. We also seem to be pretty inquisitive people, but I don't think the Neanderthals moved around nearly as much, at least. So it would be. It would also be interesting to not have found any bones along the path.
Bill Brock would say that's because they're very, very, very meticulous cannibals that eat. If any of their people die, they eat everything down to the bone.
But there would have been something between that and Neanderthals. There would have been steps along the way, and that before developing that practice, and we would have seen at least some of the steps before they got into all of the bone eating, perfectly hide all of our
which is why his partner Ronnie LeBlanc says I what's going on is not a terrestrial hominid, it's a interdimensional traveler. Mm. And he points to a 2012 NASA-sponsored project where an Iowa, University of Iowa scientist funded by NASA was able to determine a way to locate what are called X points or electron diffusion points. Now, NASA apparently has known about these for a long time. They are magnetic portals that pop up, usually stay open for like 10 to 12 seconds, somewhat randomly, all over the Earth every day. And in those moments, the magnetic field of Earth and other bodies, usually the sun, because that's the magnetic field that is the most dominant to us, are connected in such a way that the 93 million or so miles that exist between us almost doesn't seem like it exists in terms of like the studies they've done in there. And like what they wanted to do, obviously, is like if we could figure out where these things were, then we could send, you know, drones or crafts there to sort of find them. And this University of Iowa scientist was like, I think I figured out how to find them. And there's an entire website, the magnetospheric multiscale searching website, which is funded by NASA, that talks all about these experiments. But Ronnie LeBlanc and his ilk will point to this and say, what we're discovering is that the magnetic field and all the things that is happening with CERN and dark matter and the shape of the universe and all the different stuff is showing us that there might be times where something happens where a portal between our dimension and another dimension might be opening up. And his theory is that in those moments, either Bigfoot are coming in accidentally, or more likely what he thinks is the orange orbs are them exploiting that. Yeah. So they're coming in for various reasons, whether that's to do experiments, to kidnap people, just that whatever it is, that's what those orange orbs are, is they're essentially, they're opening up a portal. These creatures from another dimension are coming into ours and then they're exiting. And that's why we don't have remains. Hmm. That's why footage is often shaky. That's why people experience all these types of sort of memory loss and time loss, because it's just this moment where what we've talked about before, which is what people sometimes call a thin place, where two dimensions have a tendency to bump up against one another and it just creates anomalous results. And what's happening now is that we're starting to understand and be able to find that stuff and quantify it a bit more. Hmm. And that's Ronnie LeBlanc's theory on this.
I like that LeBlanc sounds like it could be a doctor name, but Ronnie, like a scientist, is like LeBlanc. He's like, but Ronnie, I don't know.
I mean, there's a lot of paths toward science, and some of these, some people were into the idea of Bigfoot before becoming primatologists, you know, as part of why they got into it, which is great. I mean, it's great to learn and educate yourself about what, like these sorts of, if you have a theory about them being Neanderthals, you better learn a bunch about Neanderthals.
Yeah, and better be peer reviewed.
And so, you know, I think it can still, you know, there's so much confirmation bias. It's just so fun. Every time I think I feel like consciousness is such a great dramatizer. And the reason why I love science. I just watched Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking
great.
Of like parallel universe type stuff. I hadn't watched TV in the over month that I've been here. Yeah. And that's the one thing that I finally okay, enough people. But, you know, I love things like that, but I think that's just in us. And I think that, it's just a little more fun and interesting for some of us than what reality is. It's hard to appreciate. Like, you could walk outside and to describe, I mean, just to like scientifically figure out everything about this room, to understand the kind of wood that this table is made out of and the evolution of those trees, and to understand the iron frame here and the history of soldering and metalwork and how we discovered minerals along the way, and carpet. There's these patchwork carpet that was started developing. They took cues from the environment, this guy Ray something, he passed away, but he wanted to make sustainable carpet, came up with the idea of you know what, if you make carpet in patches like this, you can take a patch off when it's ruined, and then rather than recarpet the whole floor, that was one of his many novel carpet idea, and I could go on and on, like just to figure out this fucking room.
It would take
a lifetime.
People take for granted how much crazy shit had to happen for us to be right here. And it has nothing to do with the paranormal.
Yeah.
Normal
is incredibly mysterious.
It really is. And so I guess I've made it a little bit of my life mission to try to like get people to appreciate like,
that's cool.
Reality is like a neat thing. Right? It's fucking weird that we're here. Yeah. Like, no matter what your take on it is, like, it's strange. On my worst days, when I'm suicidal or we just want to give up and hate everything that I've done with my life, my career path, and there's no hope. Even on my worst days, I think, what a weird fucking odd, curious thing just to exist. Yeah. It's just so strange.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, you said that in the sense that we've discovered most everything on land, but the ocean is still very much mysterious. That's where this idea to me, because if you think about the Earth floating in a galaxy amongst infinite galaxies that appear.
Seems
like,
thanks, James Webb.
And then I'm like, well, I'm not going to rule out that there somewhere is some galaxy where they've figured out how to portal jump.
Right.
Yeah.
And when I think of that, I'm like, I'm just
still
not
have dumb primate bodies, hairy primate bodies. Why even have a body at all at that point? It's like true. Bodies are the worst part.
That might be because, I mean, who do we send to war? We don't send our best and brightest. Like, you send, like...
Well, we send drones now. Why even have... Why not just have a central system that's, like... I am, my body is made up of 100,000 tiny drones spread out everywhere that fills in all of my consciousness.
Well, maybe they're not that far ahead of us.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Like they had a car last week and now they're like, oh, we got the portal.
Well, I mean, how far?
You're going to wear that? Look, to there?
I think teleportation is, so there's a good, Michio Kaku had a book, The Physics of the Impossible, years ago. And, he's a cool physicist, good communicator.
Yeah, I like it.
A lot of his ideas are probably a little too fun, I think, which is part of the necessity of being a good science communicator. But
yeah, got to inspire people on some level.
In that, like, time travel is physically possible. Perpetual motion is not possible according to the laws of physics as we know them, and there's like the reasons why he breaks it down. It doesn't. That's as we know them. It doesn't mean that physics agrees with everything that we know about it. But teleport. I mean, we can already teleport like electrons over
spooky
over
action
over
at a distance.
River.
Yeah, spooky. What is it called? Spooky. Yeah. With quarks, or like you or rotate
so
one electron.
Long since I've talked about physics just, with anybody.
They just did, I think they just passed a record in terms of causing one electron to spin and its twin somewhere else spinning. It's like they just passed a record on Earth of it happening. So that stuff's so cool to me. I love that.
And I think that, you know, to my point is that, like, I think that if in the next, let's say, 100 to 1,000 years, what they're doing with the Hadron Collider, we're like, we can't travel through space the way we thought about it. We thought about air travel. You have to like exploit this ability to sort of wormhole through time and space.
You got to wear this Bigfoot suit.
And so we dial that in.
That's the only way it works.
Right.
I mean, that's even the idea of like time travel is like one of the reasons why, like, well, if time travel is possible, how come we've never bumped into a time traveler? And like, well, they might not have made their presence known or whatever else. But then there's also something more interesting, or if not more interesting, but another interesting idea about a constraint, which is that you need the ability to open a wormhole.
Right.
And then, in some point in the future, you can reopen that wormhole and then go back to the moment that it was opened.
It starts at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe it could be that these Neanderthals figured out some way of opening wormholes, and then they've been able to like travel back and forth through these specific points. I would say a easier explanation for why like UFO sightings are happening in the same parts as ghosts are being seen as being in the same parts that Bigfoot is being seen as, like, I think there's probably like a good number of cultural explanations for that in terms
and gas
of
leaks.
Bad water,
or just environmental. Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, know, less light, so it's just darker and just. I mean,
yeah.
I went to one of the dark sky areas in Idaho, and you're like, oh god, you see
the shit moving all
the time. The crazy shit, and you're like, this is going on in Raleigh. You just can't see it.
Yeah.
I mean, you start if you're alone at night, you start hearing more noises and everything else. And
it plays in the psychology part.
But it also has to do with the stories that are told through culture. So it's once in a while there's like when Incubus and Succubus, when those ideas took off, then everyone that would experience sleep paralysis, which no one knew what sleep paralysis was. There's like a lot of like synesthesia when people see music as colors hear a certain word and smell bacon or like a peculiar smell that, and it just like some wires kind of crossed that are, usually pruned in early development, remain connected abnormally in some people. We all have a little bit. Like I see the number 11 as yellow, and
those little things they show with the dots where you're like,
colorblind. It's like, yeah.
If I think of the number 11, it's yellow in my mind, and I have to be careful if I'm saying either the word yellow or 11, because there's some connection in my mind.
Wow, that's crazy.
The two. So like seeing yellow also makes me think of 11 with the pipes and stuff. And people with more severe, just increased synesthesia. Like some of them have like pi memorized to 27,000.
Right.
It's because they just close their eyes and see every number is a shape to them. So they're just looking at a landscape.
Right. And do you think that's based in the brain, or do you think that's tapping into something outside of the brain?
Oh, it's based in the brain. So there's early in development, you come out as a baby and your brain's like a lot more of a blob than what it like matures into. And a part of the process of learning and the maturity of the brain is a process of synaptic pruning, where basically neurons are killed off between areas so that connections are severed to make categorization easier. So you actually don't know really that there's much of a difference between, say, food and a color or a sound or whatever when you're first kind of born and in pre-development. And then that's part of what learning and experience in the first several years of life, the synaptic pruning happens. And in some people, some of those normal prunings didn't happen.
Right. So it's like how some kids didn't learn that you shouldn't touch a hot stove. They never had that experience to chop that nerve out through whatever the thing is. I shouldn't do that.
Yeah. So like through time, there had been people that, you know, there'd be like a famous conductor that was an incredibly skilled conductor, probably because he had special access to being able to see music as this colorful representation. But he, as far as he knew, because synesthesia was not a scientifically diagnosed or understood thing 300 years ago or whatever, he thought everyone saw this. So he would, like his orchestra, he'd be like, hey, could the violins, I'm going to need a little more orange of you. And they'd be like, huh? And like play something and be like, no, that's red. Orange. That's blue. Orange. And they'd like keep on doing things until he'd be like, yes, orange. Crazy. Bring that up. And then they'd eventually just learn to translate that when he says orange, he means like B flat or whatever.
Wow.
And so I think there's some stuff like that. So anyway, then what's happened with like paranormal over time is we have these capacities for, very testable, it's called apophenia, that we tend to make more connections to things than there actually are. Mm. And there's adaptive advantages to that because a brain's never going to be perfect. There's this kind of error management theory that is worth thinking about and how brains have evolved, which is you have a fire alarm and it can error in one of two ways. It can either go off when it's not supposed to and that's annoying, or it cannot go off when it's supposed to and you lose a lot of life and that's horrific. Yeah. And so
can just beep when the battery's low.
Right.
Constantly.
Yeah. But they also, like, when engineers make a smoke alarm, they have to think, well, we have to assume that we can't that there is no possible way to create a perfect smoke alarm that is exactly accurate every single time. So if we're going to bias it, we're going to bias it towards safety. Right. So it goes off more often when the toast burns. So we have a lot of psychological things like the mating behavior and like negativity bias to keep us from touching hot stoves. And so taking a chance on eating a berry if it's poisonous is like the payoff of a good berry is not equal to getting killed because you ate a poisonous berry or whatever. So we have this negativity bias and tend to remember negative things more, and those become more salient and everything else. So within that, we have this making connections that don't exist seems to be less costly than not making a connection that does exist. So like if you hear that sound at night, it's probably not someone breaking into your house, but you can err in one of two ways.
Yeah,
don't get up and check it out and it is someone, now you're dead. Whereas if you do get up, well, you lost some sleep and, you know, maybe feel dumb or whatever, but that's, you are primed to, you're biased in that way. And so, so like Incubus and Succubus is an interesting example because it went from, so people would have sleep paralysis, and I don't know if you've ever experienced
it, but holy shit. Have you seen the man?
Probably
in the hat?
Everyone will.
I have. I've seen the guy.
I've had someone sit on my bed. It's crazy.
I was very, very, very young the one time that I had it, and I just remember it being just bonkers and scary.
Scary is all
horrible.
Your body is paralyzed when you go to sleep, so you don't Mike Birbiglia and jump out of a second story.
Sure. That got him a comedy special though.
Yeah. Whatever.
Why can't we have
almost got him killed?
I know, right?
My God, if he would have been on the 10th story instead, we wouldn't have a Mike Birbiglia around.
That's true.
And so your body's supposed to shut down, and then sometimes it doesn't wake up the same time the brain does. And consciousness loves coming up with stories of that.
Right.
And so, and part of the stories that it will come up with are based on what stories are and works of fiction are within the environment. So Incubus and Succubus had its time. And so then everyone was getting like, you know, molested by these ghosts, you know, like,
sexy ghosts.
I got raped by a ghost. happened to you too. Ghosts always, everyone gets raped by a ghost at least once in their life.
I think Dan Aykroyd got like a blowjob by a ghost.
Ghostbusters,
he didn't stop it though, fair.
That's gotta be the worst though. Like when you're like, I was raped, but she was a totally naked woman. It's like, mine was totally a woman too. Totally fine. It was definitely not a guy. It's like you got to change your story to fit what they believe because you don't want to, you have your own biases in terms of like what makes you a man. Oh no, my succubus was, it wasn't an incubus, it was definitely a succubus.
So that all always changes through time. And so, and then the way that our consciousness perceives things, like the idea of like what an idea, what, you know, we, the way it shapes our language, we go like, oh, I had this spark of an idea, and the spark used to be this, you know, this great this great fire that would come up, this crackling that's captivated humans for so long. And then the light bulb comes around, and you go, ooh, I just had this light bulb go off in my head. And then, like, cars come around, and we, you know, instead of, like, describing motivation as, like, plowing through things. Now we're taking charge of the wheel, and I'm in the driver's seat. And then technology continues to advance, and now when we're learning things, now we're getting these massive downloads, you know, having to defrag, so technology and culture itself influences how we describe our own inner worlds to ourselves. And so all of this is a long-winded way of saying that I think that it's very interesting to see this like old belief of Bigfoot now mixing in with like Star Wars and all of these various shows are becoming more and more popular, and we're understanding new possibilities in the world that they're kind of mixing in with.
Yeah, one day we'll describe picking ourselves up by our bootstraps by like, I just want to be a Bigfoot that walked through a portal. Like,
exactly.
Well, I'll give my final thought to kick things off.
Okay,
sure.
Which is admittedly weird, but because what I'd like to do is combine the two partners that we have, one saying these are the Neanderthals and one saying these are portal jumpers. I think that's the same thing. I think that the Neanderthals were portal jumpers that were sent from whatever dying galaxy they lived on. They found a Goldilocks planet, ours, and they were like, go and try to habitate this planet. And they're the remnants of the original. So like whatever this culture is, they've been jumping here for 35 to 45,000 years, trying to, you know, find a place where they could live. And maybe that's like the weird mixing that, you know, yeah. these, this sort of, we've talked a lot about, the theory that there are multiple sources for Homo sapiens. It might come from different places. It's a very controversial theory. But like in any case, I'm going to say the Neanderthals were the original portal jumpers.
Okay.
And that's what's, these are all just, this is the people yeah. that came to Earth before Homo sapiens evolved.
I like that. And I like the fact that they're hiding. It's like, well, we got there and then shaving was big and nobody wants to fuck us. So we're just showing up once in a while, just seeing if they're growing it out. That's what I'd like to.
They're just trying to find mates that are into the hirsute fish.
Yeah, the hirsute, yes.
Yes, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, yeah, I mean, right? I mean, because if they're anything like us, they're driven by very simple things like survival and reproduction and things like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like that.
That's fun. All right, I'll give my final thought and then I'll let you end it out. I don't know. This, again, I think this is all based on stories and mythology that we all love and we all, again, make it fun again. And, even if there's zero basis in scientific fact about anything we talk about, I've had a good time for an hour.
Yeah.
Regardless. And this is kind of how people sat around a fire and shared stories and mythologies. And those were just podcasts of their days. They just sat around. Sure. They're like, I don't know. This is kind of an out there theory. Right. But it gets brains thinking and it gets people thinking, because I think all science is driven by curiosity and all inventions and leaps in technology have come from going, what if we had a portal? It's like, well, how would you make a portal? Do I need a hair suit?
Right.
So it's fun. It's all fun to me, and it's fun to speculate on things, because that's why, and that's how you get to things, I guess is what I'm trying to say. It's like, you don't get anywhere by going, well, these are the facts. This table's made of wood. It's like, but what's wood made of? Well, how'd it become wood? Like, it's just thinking outside our normal conventions and just questioning the world regardless of whether you have scientific fact. But it's good to have someone like Shane that has a little bit of knowledge about science and say, well, here's how that might work.
Yeah,
so
it's
fun for me regardless. I hope there's Bigfoot. If he lives in another dimension, take me with you, man. Let's hang out. I'll put a suit on.
Yeah. You're gonna be a hairless ape in a zoo somewhere in the other galaxy.
Yeah. And they're like, he's bald, but he's full of hair and he's tiny. He's a very short man. How he doesn't belong here.
Smallfoot.
Yeah.
The legend of small feet.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got a final thought for us, Shane?
I mean, I guess I can kind of recap what I've been saying, which is that, like, I don't believe in Bigfoot. I don't respect the belief of Bigfoot. I think it's stupid. I'd rather be talking to an interdimensional Bigfoot than talking with people that believe in it.
Seriously.
I take back everything I said about the studio. I no longer like it. It's getting musty as fuck in here.
Yeah, we're not doing the festival anymore.
I came here to promote my dumb camp out and stupid thing anyway. Yeah. Yeah. Fuck Bigfoot.
Well, he won't be there. He definitely will not be there.
I mean, that's what I like about Bigfoot, is it, at least like no one does get like that.
Right.
Fuck you, man. Right. You believe in Bigfoot?
Yeah.
Like, you
know? Yeah. It's right.
Yeah. And you can't be mad when you really, I mean, obviously we all have our beliefs. We all have things we've experienced and we have reasons for those things, but you can't be a person that gets angry about Bigfoot, because what proof in the grand scheme of things does either side have? We have just as much proof that he does exist that, well, probably more that he doesn't, but that's fine. You know?
Right. I think, and this is sort of recapping some of what Shane said, but also just things we've talked about, like there is something about the unknown, that the bewilderment and the sort of like that, I feel like people just need a little bit of that, because if like the world is just particles moving, there's really not much to do. Like, right. Like for me, that the empath of that definitely ends in a fatalism to me.
Right.
But I think that my brain, and then maybe that's cause like synapses didn't sever when I was a child, like has this sort of gravitates towards, I need something that's sort of mysterious and unknown and discoverable to wake up every morning and be like, well, maybe today will be the day, you know? Yeah. Like,
well,
so
it's like why people are detectives, I think. It's like it drives you to be like, I don't.
Yeah.
It's when you find that ending, you're so excited. I used to go to this website called The Sneeze. It was, I don't know who runs it, but he would have this cartoon that he would bring up. He's like, there's a cartoon when I was a kid. I can't find it. And literally his entire fan base started searching for these cartoons from when he was a kid. Hmm. I found them. And I've never felt more excited to discover something, even though like it could have been fake. It could have been, he just put me on a treasure hunt for no reason. But just the fact that I discovered, I felt, man, that'll drive me to find more cartoons from kids, but nobody else was looking. So.
Yeah. And I think you see that often in Bigfoot hunters. There's an obsession that like they will never face evidence to the contrary because it's just, it's the search that it's become addicting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's.
I kind of appreciate the idea of the search. Is what
the search is. I guess it's. I think that's, and that's life. And, to get away from the fatalistic point, it's like it's not about where we end up, regardless of what you believe. It's about what you're doing on Earth now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great final thought. And just to recap, our we're so glad to have Shane here on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
September 9th also, through 11th.
Yeah. We'll figure out when we're, I haven't put together the schedule. I don't even know like what bands are playing what days. I haven't done half of the comedy booking that I need to and stuff yet, but we'll figure out. Once I figure out the day, you'll have to make sure and tell people that.
Yes,
too.
Absolutely.
We might do day passes.
So cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, that'd be good. It's easy for Raleigh people to drive out, come back.
Originally, it was all going to be our fans and people are flying in and stuff. And it's like, we'll do day passes for people.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah.
Well, that's great. Well, Shane Moss, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah.
This
has been Conspiracy Beer Me. I am Justin Scranton.
I'm Shane Smith, and this was
Shane Moss.
Peace.